Hello, podcasters. A great episode today. We were a little passionate about AOC and the squad taking on Donald Trump. We have a few things to say. Even used a little Malcolm X audio to kind of make you feel a little bit better. Also, the most racist president in history. Historians have now deemed Donald Trump tied for first place. Wait until you hear that story. Also, we had Ezra Levant on talking about Tommy Robinson. He's being, he's in jail now, in prison, actually. When you hear his story, it's one that you should pay attention. Of course, don't talk about it on Facebook because they'll kick you off if you do. I don't like that. I'm somebody who believes if somebody tells me not to do something, I'm going to do it. So we talked about him. Also, an incredible story that's outlined in a new book, One Base at a Time. A guy whose work you've seen, if you're a sports fan, you've seen his work. And I guarantee at one time you went, wow, that is really cool. I'm not going to tell you what he's done in sports. I'm going to tell you how he got there. In the new book, One Base at a Time, he's on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
We have Home Title Lock is our sponsor. Here, one of the largest real estate title companies suffered a big breach. She has 900 million files.
That's no big deal.
I mean, it's only 900 million.
Yeah, it's only three times the population of the United States.
Well, it could be more than one document per person.
Yeah, it could be.
So,
could be. Anyway, if you think that's a problem, what you really need is Home Title Lock. Home Title Lock is the only people that are actually looking to protect your title. They're the only ones that can do this. They actually stand at the digital gates or the digital vault, and any title that is being changed, like 95% of them have to go in and out of this vault door, and that's where they're positioned. So once you're a client of theirs, anybody trying to change anything on your title, they immediately notify you and say, are you changing this title? If you say no, they're on it. This is really critical. FBI says this is the fastest growing crime in Manhattan. It's an epidemic, is what they say in Manhattan. Go to HomeTitleLock.com. HomeTitleLock.com. Get 60 days risk-free protection. HomeTitleLock.com. So the GOP now apparently just is trying to elevate AOC and make her into the face of the party. Well, sure. Okay, maybe. But I think it's really just a desire to make sure everybody knows who she is. And know that the Democratic Party is in mortal combat with people who think like her. That's really what it is. She is the quintessential take the mask off. I'm dying to tell you who I am. She and her, what do they call it? The squad. She and her squad want you to know exactly what they want to do to this country. And what they want to do to this country is abandon the free market, reverse the Constitution, change us fundamentally. Now, I guess the GOP just wants to elevate AOC, and that's the only reason why Donald Trump tweeted, maybe you should leave. If you don't like it, leave. Well, that's racist. That's racist, you know. Is it? Or is it possibly A, the truth? And when I say the truth, meaning the way we feel, you know, the way people, we're so tired of being told that we are a bad place, that we're bad people, that white people are the problem. I'm so tired of it. You know what? If you don't like it, there are about 169 other countries you could go to right now that's not America. Well, we don't leave things that we love. That was the quote. We don't leave things that we love. Tell me what you love about it. I have not heard the things you love about it.
It's not the Constitution. It's not the free market. It's not our history. Hell, it's not even half the people. Because half the people here are clearly racists. So what is it that you love? And by the way, call me old-fashioned, but you don't fundamentally change the things you love. Oh, man, I bought this Picasso. I just love it. It's wonderful. I just want to put the nose where the nose belongs. You don't love the Picasso, dude. We are a different place. We have a different system. We work things out over time. It takes a long time to do it. But this country believes in the individual. And there's always a problem when somebody says, you know what, the individual doesn't really get it. That's when you have monsters like Andrew Jackson appear. That's when you have, quite frankly, monsters like FDR, who rounded people up, put them in concentration camps, real ones, American citizens. That was your progressive president for you. Now, here's my real problem. My real problem is with the press. The press has deemed Donald Trump's statements racist and deemed now him a racist. There is no, as they said, Donald Trump apparently thinks that some of the things the people in the squad have said were, quote, anti-Semitic or, quote, socialist. Well, why the quotes? Why the quotes? You don't want to claim what they're saying about Jews are anti-Semitic?
You can't read into their comments at all.
No, you can't say when they say I'm a democratic socialist, you can't say that they're socialists.
That's exactly what Politico did. They actually said after they described how he was very racist, they said, by the way, none of the four lawmakers are socialists.
All are saying that.
Right. Why? Because she's a democratic socialist, which is the difference between vanilla ice cream and chocolate chip ice cream. But they're both ice cream.
Oh, my
right?
gosh. Like, it's absolutely incredible. And by the way, look up what democratic socialists actually want. Don't look at it from a somebody who is trying to cover it up. Go to the source, to the democratic socialists, and look at what they want. Now, Donald Trump is only saying this because the GOP is just, quote, wanting to describe these people as socialists. I'm so sick of this. This is why Donald Trump is going to actually gain points from this. And we can dance around the edges and go, well, should he have said it? Shouldn't he have said it? We could argue about that all day long. Why? I personally think this president, I just don't believe the guy who was hanging out with Jesse Jackson is a racist. I just don't believe the guy who lived in New York forever and got along with everybody is a racist. Does he say stupid things? Yeah. Do I really think that he's a racist? No, I don't. Now, you might have a different opinion on that. You can make a case, but neither one of us know if it's true or not.
You're reading into his motivation, right?
Exactly right. And what I read into this is, shut up. That's what I read into his comments. Shut up. I am so sick and tired of you guys saying everything is bad in America. If you don't like it, leave. Now, I've never liked that, because if you don't like everything in America, you don't have to like everything in America. But you're trying to fundamentally transform it, and you're using every single tactic. And you know what? If America cannot see who these people are once the masks come off, you're doomed, America. You're just doomed. Let me play what I said. This is back in about 2009, 2008, when I was at Fox. This is what I said would happen.
The radicals reveal themselves. They'll become unafraid. I told you this, and I believe I set this up with something along the lines of, look out, because we'll be in trouble when the mask starts to come off. I told you about a year ago that as it would come unraveled, the radicals would start revealing themselves. Watch. I think these people are close. I think they're dying to tell us what the real agenda is. I think they're close to taking the mask off. Okay, got it?
So what was that? Things are at the breaking point. Donald Trump has brought this to the breaking point. The Democratic Party is at the breaking point. And it's going to be decided in the next year whether or not they become all radicals or the average Democrat still has a party to go to. They're saying that Donald Trump is building unity with Nancy Pelosi and unity against Trump. Well, I have to tell you, I think it works both ways. I think he's also building unity for Trump, for himself. They are socialists. I believe, based on their anti-Semitic remarks, they are also anti-Semites. Based on all of their quotes about white people, I believe they are also racists. But I don't know. But I do know they want to destroy the free market. They want to reverse the Bill of Rights and make it into a charter of negative liberties. I'm sorry, positive liberties. What the government must do. You don't change the things that you love. People are sick of this bizarro world that we're living in. People are sick of this world that the media claims not to see. This world where everything that you think you know or knew, let me put it this way, you might have heard this if you're a longtime listener. People are sick of a world where everything they thought was solid is liquid. Everything that it was up is down. They're sick of it, and they know it, and they know it. They took the masks off because they think they're in the majority, but I have news for them. They're not. Let me give you a flashback. We surround them. It's not the other way around. We surround them. They have just co-opted social media. They have co-opted the media giants and the new media giants. But they're not in the majority. The majority of Americans know free health care for all illegal aliens is insane. People know instinctively that you may want more immigrants, less immigrants, whatever, but we need to know who's coming in. The vast majority of people know that. The vast majority of people do not dismiss MS-13. They don't look at these as good people or people who have just gone astray. They know who MS-13 is. And if they don't, all they have to do is to look at the local headlines of their paper. In L.A. today, 22 people are on trial from MS-13. Why are they on trial? Lots of reasons. And kind of the one that stands out is they were beheading people and hacking people to death with machetes. I don't know. That sounds like something maybe we don't want on the streets of America. And by the way, it's not just me saying this. I'm going to pause for a minute and I'm going to come back. I'm going to show you that Democrats are now saying this. I'll also show you that what the president said is going to resonate with a lot of people. I don't like the way he said it per se, but I got news for you. He's speaking what millions of Americans are feeling. What this American is feeling. And it's going to work to his advantage. Because it's based in truth.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and if you like what you hear on the program, you should check out Pat Gray Unleashed. His podcast is available wherever you download your favorite podcast. I think we kind of stumbled onto something here with talking about the times that we're in right now. I sense the end coming, and that could be in 10 years, but I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that we're at a pivot point right now. And we've seen it before. Do we have that Malcolm X audio? Let me play this Malcolm X audio. He's talking about Barry Goldwater. And I'm not sure he likes Barry Goldwater an awful lot. But he also doesn't like liberals. Now, listen to what Malcolm X said.
Well, if Goldwater ever becomes president, one thing his presence in the White House will do, it will make black people in America have to face up to facts, probably for the first time in many, many years. And this in itself is good. This will have a tendency to make the Negro, probably for the first time, do something to stand on his own feet and solve his own problem instead of putting himself in a position to be misled, misused, exploited by the whites who pose as liberals only for the purpose of getting the support of the Negro. So in one sense, Goldwater's coming in will awaken the Negro, and it will probably awaken the entire world, more so than the world has been awakened since Hitler.
Okay, you know, the last part, you know, might be unfair, but listen to what he said. He said, if somebody comes in like Barry Goldwater, shakes things up, they're going to have to look and say, you know, these are not my friends. I think this is happening. Now, a lot of African Americans are silently, and some not so silently, supporting Donald Trump. So this message from the 1960s is at least relevant to today. The message that we just were talking about with revolution, you have to remember the Beatles were part of this hippie loving thing. Remember, they were, you know, smoking pot, having incense, going, you know, off to the mountains to find themselves with, you know, gurus, all of these things. They were very, at the beginning, they were very much part of the culture, but at the same time, counterculture. And as we got closer to the 1968, 1969, 1970 era, they were very almost counterculture. They were in the hippie movement. And they kept being asked, will you join the revolution? There was a marker set down because what AOC doesn't have is a music revolution. The hippies back then, they had all the musicians on board. And then the Beatles came out with Revolution. And you say you want a revolution. Well, we all want to change the world. But if you want money for people with minds that hate, all I can tell you, brother, is you're going to have to wait. Don't you know it's going to be all right? You say you want to change the Constitution. Well, we all want to change your head. You tell me it's the institution. We better free your mind instead. If you're carrying pictures of Chairman Mao, you ain't going to make it with anyone anyhow. Don't you know it's going to be all right? I think we're at this point again.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks. Don't they get it? This only helps Donald Trump. This only helps him.
Maybe that's their goal.
Maybe it does, it is.
They act like it's their goal.
I know. They don't get how far out of touch they are. America's not buying into your definition of racism. It's just not. Because it's, I got news for you, a new definition of racism. We all knew what racists were for a very long time. You can spot them a million miles away. All right. So let's go to a new poll first before we reveal the most racist president that's holding Donald Trump back from being the most racist president himself ever, all time.
It's fascinating. I mean, because journalists are using this. They are saying these comments are racist like they're saying they're in English. right? Like, it's an absolute fact that everyone understands.
Yeah.
And anytime you say to anyone that they should go back to another country, that means you're a racist, despite the fact that, of course, you know, we brought up the example of Piers Morgan that we have maybe occasionally mentioned.
Maybe a lot.
Are, you know, the fundamental, you know, concepts of our Constitution so much, perhaps he would go back to England,
right,
and stop bothering us with
you racist.
Stupid
show. Why do you hate white people so much?
Exactly. I mean, it's just, it's, and this is the thing, I think, fundamentally, which what happens with Donald Trump, which is when Donald Trump disagrees with someone, he insults them publicly, right? That is the pattern we all understand. Everyone on earth understands that's what Donald Trump does. When someone says something bad about him, when Justin Amash says something bad about him, he trashes him in public, right? It's only when, like, so everyone, when the person is white, people just say, well, he's just trashing people, he's unpresidential, whatever it is. When it's someone who isn't white, they say the motivation is racism. Now, we all know he, every time someone disagrees with him, he just comes up with some insult against them. But it's always the motivation of Donald Trump is applied externally from journalists, and they say every time it happens to be a black person or a Hispanic person, it must be racism. Maxine Waters was the same thing. They tried the same thing with Maxine Waters. So, you know, you can certainly make an argument that you think he's motivated by racism. Make your case. That's fine. However, a journalist should not be just applying this like you're saying, well, Donald Trump tweeted something in English yesterday. It's not that is not the same thing. You are applying a motivation. You are reading his mind as to what you think caused this problem. And that is not something you're supposed to do as a journalist. But I love this part of this. This is USA Today.
All right.
They do a poll. Now, what is the issue here? What's the problem with these tweets if you are in the media? What you're saying is, right, that Donald Trump is saying the comments made, the criticisms made by these four congresswomen are essentially un-American. They should leave. They're so critical of this country. They hate it so much. They're against America. They're un-American. They should leave, right? That is what he said, and that's what the problem is. They're saying, well, you can't say the criticism is un-American. How dare you say that? You wanted them to leave? Here is how they do a poll about Donald Trump's tweets. This is it. President Trump's tweets calling on four Democratic congresswomen to go back to their original countries instead of criticizing the United States were un-American. Do you agree? Wait, the whole controversy is you're mad at Donald Trump for saying someone else's opinion is un-American, and you poll them asking if Donald Trump's criticisms are un-American. You're doing the exact same thing you're accusing him of. The exact same thing.
I am
thing.
So, every day I become more and more confident that they're just, let them go. Let them go. They're just destroying themselves.
Yeah. I mean, you just can't care about this stuff, I guess. I do get, when it comes down to rewriting history, though, I get a little offended.
Well, you can't say that they're doing that.
I can. A Pulitzer Prize winning historian.
Historian.
His name is John Meacham.
Uh-huh.
He was on MSNBC.
Yeah.
And he is now saying there's a tie at number one for the most racist president in American history.
So it's got to be Andrew Jackson, mm-hmm. You know, the whole, you know, bloody tears, you know, veil of, or what was it? It's a trail of mm-hmm. tears, that whole thing. Mm-hmm. Could be either Jackson. I would vote for Wilson.
I knew you would vote for Wilson, yeah. Of course.
So what does he say? Which one?
But it was Andrew Johnson. Andrew Johnson was the number one tie. So not Jackson and not Wilson.
Andrew Johnson?
Johnson said that in a state message that African Americans were incapable of self-government and relapsed into barbarism if they weren't closely supervised. That sounds pretty darn racist. But I don't know if I would put
bringing
back the KKK in the 20th century.
Right.
I mean.
Right. I mean, Wilson, here's how bad Wilson was. You ready for this? He resegregated the government. Yeah. Okay.
Now you want to talk to.
One, let's just put this into perspective. I'm not defending Johnson at all. I don't know much about Johnson. I know he was the first president to be impeached. He was horrible. I know Abraham Lincoln hated him. That's as far as I've gone on Johnson. So he might turn out to be a horrible, horrible racist as well. My guess is.
It's a pretty bad comment. Yeah.
Yeah. My guess is he was. However, put that into the context of his time. Okay. One of the things that all abolitionists had to deal with were people who were on their side, but they said, they're going to kill us. Okay, how do we, can we put them on ships and send them someplace else? Because we've been really bad to them and they're going to kill us. That was one of them. Mm-hmm. The other was the more compassionate. They've never had to do anything other than exactly what they've been told for generations. How are they going to build a society and live in a society when we've torn apart their families, when we've put them in these little communities where they have no control? This might be the most cruel thing you could possibly do. So put it into the context of that's what he was maybe saying. He may have been just out and out racist. But the actual argument at the time, which maybe he was just going in for and trying to make it, and he was really an undercover racist, and he was only saying this to reflect what thoughtful people were thinking at the time. But let's compare that. Let's just say that's he meant it as they're inferior. Woodrow Wilson, this is just one on his hit parade. Woodrow Wilson actually resegregated the government. Okay, so we weren't segregated. You had postmaster generals and people that were working side by side in the government, black, white, no problem, until Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson then resegregated. But there was one office, and I don't remember what it was. There was one office, it might have been in the mail service, where he couldn't segregate the blacks and the whites. There was this one guy whose job had to be done in this office with all the other whites. Okay? You know this story?
I think I know where you're going on this one.
He built a cage around that employee. Mm-hmm. Okay? He wanted to make sure that that guy was segregated, and so they built a cage for that employee that he had to stay in all the time.
I believe they called them screens, Glenn. Screens around that employee.
Okay, all right, sure.
To screen the blackness from the other employees. Also, he said that segregation is not a humiliation, but a benefit, and ought to be so regarded by you gentlemen. Well, there you go! Oh, it's not a big deal. Now, I think that that's what's remarkable about Wilson and why, you know, like, for example, Wilson wasn't as big a government guy as many people who came after him. But he changed. He went against the grain, right?
He was going the other direction.
Right. And the same thing with race. Like, we were slowly advancing past the racial, horrific mistakes of the past. And he said, you know what? Let me jam on the brakes, throw the thing into an emergency brake, spin the car around and start driving the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. That's really hard to do.
He did it, and he did it as fast as you know, you're watching Mission Impossible when Tom Cruise pulls up the handbrake and he's going 60 miles an hour and he spins around and he's going the other direction at 60 miles an hour. That's how fast he did it. This guy was an outrage. He's responsible for the reinstitution of the Klan.
Now think about that. The Klan goes away, and he's like, yeah, let's bring it back. Brings it into the White House. The movie that essentially relaunches the Klan based on his writings.
His book.
I mean, like, this is a guy, Wilson, to me, blatantly is the most racist president because he broke the mold of the time. It's a difficult thing.
But he didn't in some ways.
In some ways. Well, okay. He was with certainly the progressive movement at
Correct.
The time was incredibly racist.
Correct.
But I'll say the inertia of the time.
Yeah.
Right.
The people were going one direction. Mm-hmm. But the brainiacs, the leather patch jacket
the
people.
The scientists. The academics.
Do you know what Origin of the Species? Look this up.
Oh, yeah. The real title?
Yeah.
You told me about this at the museum. Is that the museum?
Yeah.
And it is the full title of it is a little revealing.
Yeah. Let's see. Origin of the Species. Thank God we have this now. Okay. So let me see if it's even on this.
It is. When you talked about it the other day, I searched for it. Here I have it here.
You have it?
Origin of the Species. This is the Charles Darwin book, of course.
Or the subtitle.
Of course, it's a little blurry here. So Hold on one second. It's helpful. Thank you, Internet. Thank you for that. Okay. Origin of the species by means of natural selection.
Right.
Or the preservation of favored races in the struggle for life.
Okay. So now here, I just want you to put this into perspective. What the founders were saying and what people were saying at the time was, look, they don't have a society that we recognize. Okay. We have built this society. They were dumb. They were wrong. And we don't recognize that as really civilization. I mean, they're living in the jungles and they're hunting with spears, blah, 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 blah. So they don't recognize that as at the same level. Remember, this is 200, 300 years ago. So they were having this conversation of, all right, so are they fully developed or not? What is the deal? Lincoln and people like John Quincy Adams and, yes, Thomas Jefferson, they all said, no, they are men, but we don't know. Like Jefferson, I don't know what's going to happen if we release them now. We have to have a full plan here. Have to have a full plan. Lincoln said they are men, fully men. But then Origin of the Species happens. And this is where the racists all flock. No, it's scientific proof now that there is a favored species or a favored race.
There was a consensus on this.
Yes, it's a consensus. And science is now proving it, that there is a superior race. And in Origin of the Species, basically, he's saying, you know what you should do is just, we have to take the Africans and put them back into Africa, put them back in the oven, let them bake a little longer. So they can really become fully human, because that's where the monkey image comes from. Origin of the Species. They're not fully human. See, we all evolved from monkeys, but
they're not there yet.
They're not there
that
yet.
That was the argument by Darwin and so many others.
Right. That's why Woodrow Wilson in his book has all the African Americans look like monkeys. That's all that comes from. And Donald Trump beats that guy?
That's insanity.
It's insanity. This historian ought to be ashamed of himself. Absolutely ashamed of himself.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and you're listening to the Glenn Beck program. If you like what you're hearing on this show, make sure you check out Pat Gray Unleashed. It's available wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Ezra Levant is joining us. He is the founder of RebelMedia.com. Rebel Media, also the host of Ezra, the Ezra Levant Show. He's been on the program with us several times. He was involved in another media group, if I'm not mistaken, with a good friend of ours. Anyway, I wanted to have Ezra on because there's a story about this guy named Tommy Robinson. Tommy is a guy who has been a guy who is speaking out about what's happening in England, especially with this sex ring that the government of Great Britain has covered up like nobody's business. When you read about this sex ring, even from sources like the BBC, you see, wow, is this really bad? And a lot of people are running for cover now. He's facing jail time for things that he says are not really crimes. He's being politically persecuted. He's asking for asylum here in the United States, wants Donald Trump to grant him asylum. I've read all kinds of things, even from The Blaze. I read something last week that I read and I thought, wow, that's really bad. But that's not what I've heard from other sources. And I don't know. I've tried to get Tommy Robinson on this program because I think we just need to ask questions and then hear it from him. I don't trust anybody or any source anymore. I want to hear it myself. Now, a guy who's been a very good friend of his for a long time is Ezra Levant. So we thought we would get him on the phone and get his look at who Tommy Robinson is. Hi, Ezra. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for the opportunity, Glenn.
Sure.
Tommy Robinson's a really colorful character. I mean, let's be candid. He's not the kind of guy that political pundits like you and me are used to dealing with. He grew up very working class in a poor city called Luton. And when he was young, he was a bit of a soccer hooligan. But over the course of time, he's become, I think unwillingly at first, a political activist as Luton became Islamified through mass immigration. He saw the changes to it. But I think what really animates him these days is a phenomenon we don't have in Canada, the United States yet, thank God. And it's these rape gangs. And this is not like rape as you and I might conceive it. Someone's grabbed into a dark alley, raped, and then the rapist runs off. These are gangs of men who trick and trap and exploit girls as young as 11. And then they rape them every night for years and for years. And let me give you an example. There's a city called Rotherham in the UK, 250,000 population, small city. 1,400 girls, 1,400 girls were raped continuously for a decade before police prosecuted it. And I know that sounds unthinkable. How could that be? Everyone must have known. 1,400 girls in a city of 250,000, how could it go on for a decade? Well, there was a government inquiry into it, and you know what the answer was, Glenn? Because the rapists were overwhelmingly Muslim Pakistani men, no one wanted to talk about it. They were all afraid they'd be called Islamophobic or racist. So social workers, doctors, police, press, politicians, they all shut up about it because they thought this rape is pretty bad, but I don't want to be called a racist.
Right. And this is very well documented. If you're first hearing this, this is very well documented, even by sources that would never want to be called Islamophobe. I mean, BBC has even documented this particular case. It's horrible what's going on.
Well, and that's just one city. Cities and towns all across the UK. So fast forward to last May. Tommy was standing outside a courthouse in Leeds where a 29-person gang was on trial for raping girls as young as 11. And I say again, Glenn, and I know this is hard for your listeners to hear, these girls aren't just raped once. They're raped every night by these gangs of men. And in this case, bizarrely, there were two women who were involved. So the trial was over. The jury had finished their deliberations. It was judgment day. Tommy, who was an independent journalist, he used to work with me before, but then by this point he was independent. He was standing outside the courthouse, live streaming on Facebook, his commentary on this phenomenon. So he was standing outside the court. It was about 8:30 in the morning. And as the accused rapists were going into court, he called out to them and he said this, quote, "How do you feel about your verdict today?" That's what he said. "How do you feel about your verdict today?" He didn't swear at them. He didn't insult them. He did not impede their access to the court. He filmed himself saying that, and the three or four men he talked to, they swore at him. They insulted his wife. They insulted his mother. And that's it, Glenn. That's it. And seven police swooped in. And you can see this on YouTube. They put him in the back of a police van.
Okay, so now I saw this, and I was perplexed by it. But it is fair to point out that the English laws are different than the American or Canadian laws. That is against the law. He knew he was breaking a law by doing that, correct?
Well, the thing is, he didn't report on any goings-on in the trial. He didn't know what was going on in the trial. He hadn't been in the trial. Now, I'll come back to your point in a second, because that's what they said. He was in contempt of court. And I've just described what he did. He didn't go into the court. He didn't say what was happening in the trial. He didn't know. He hadn't been in. He was talking about the general phenomenon, and he read out the names of some of the 29 accused, and he read it off of the BBC website and other websites just that day. I suppose he assumed if the state broadcaster of the United Kingdom, the BBC, has the names of these 29 accused and they're publishing them, he thought he could read them. And in fact, and so he did. I'll hurry up my story, Glenn, because I know we're short on time. So he was put in the back of a paddy wagon, taken to the judge in a trial that lasted less than 10 minutes. He was found in contempt of court. He never said a word in this trial, by the way. His live stream was about 75 minutes long. Obviously, the judge didn't review a 75-minute live stream in 10 minutes.
Right.
They finished this drumhead trial in 10 minutes because it was almost lunchtime, Glenn.
It was crazy.
And they had to go for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent him to prison for a 13-month sentence. He was the first journalist in nearly a century to be in prison for contempt of court. And guess what? They sent him to a prison with a high Muslim population. They moved him from a safe prison where he was in a ward by himself to a very dangerous prison called Onley. So the prison governor said, the warden said, well, you know, I hate to do it to you, but for your own safety, we've got to put you in solitary confinement. Oh, it sucks to be you. And so for 10 weeks, he lived in a box for 23 and a half hours a day for contempt of court. Now, we crowdfunded his appeal. The Court of Appeal threw out this conviction, said it was done improperly for about 10 reasons, and freed him from prison. After 10 weeks in solitary confinement, the Court of Appeal said everything about it was improper. But the Attorney General prosecuted him a second time, a do-over for the same offense. And last week, they sent him away for 9 months, Glenn. Now, he gets some credit for time served. But right now, Tommy Robinson is in Belmarsh Prison, the special prison for terrorists and murderers. He's in isolation in Belmarsh Prison, serving a portion of a nine-month sentence, for doing what I just said he did, for saying, how do you feel about the verdict today? He's in prison, Glenn.
All right. So, Ezra, is there any way to speak to him from prison?
People can send him an email.
Okay, but
I don't think an email back.
I can't visit
him on Tuesday, Glenn, and I'll tell him you're interested in talking. But
yeah, I want to give him a fair trial. And what really bothers me about this is that Facebook now will ban you if you are defending him or playing anything from him. You will be banned from Facebook. I don't like that. Yeah. I want to make my own decision. And I've heard some things from his past, et cetera. And I'd like to hear his version. I'm tired of hearing secondhand versions. And I would like to give him a fair hearing, because if he's being wronged, it is incumbent upon all of us to stand up for him. He might be a dicey guy that you're like, well, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a little way this way and a little way that. And people can make their own decisions. But he's being disappeared. And well, that can't happen.
Is he used to have 1 million followers on Facebook and nearly 1 million on Twitter. So he could respond to the criticisms of him. But they silenced him. So it's fallen to his surrogates and his friends. Now, Glenn, if you like, I can address some of the criticisms in that Blaze article. They point out that he has a history going back 15 years of petty crimes and other offenses. For example, when he was 21, he got into a fist fight with an off-duty cop, and that's always a bad idea. And so he was convicted and sentenced to jail. Absolutely true. When 15 years ago, And if you read his autobiography, it was the worst decision of his life, punching that cop. He didn't know it was a cop. So, yeah, if Tommy is a flawed man, obviously, as we all are. But I've gotten to know him over the years, and he's a character. And, you know, he's not from the walks of life you and I are from, Glenn. He's very working class, which in the U.K., has a certain meaning. People look down on him and people like him. And that's one of the problems, is that the more posh classes of society in the UK, well, it's not their daughters who are being raped by these grooming gangs. It's the working class indigenous white girls, you know, that no one cares about. Tommy is a voice for the working class. And yeah, that's going to mean he's not a perfect, you know, polished, you know, he doesn't know which fork, you know, if he dined with the...
No. I didn't understand this until I started working with my new assistant, who was one of my protectors for a long time. His name is Craig Poole, and he is from Scotland, and he was working class. And people do not understand the class distinction here in America. We think we do, but we really don't. So I do get it. I tell you what, Ezra, I'd love to do a podcast where we could address all of these things one by one, because there are some other things that need explaining and need answers to, because the case, it goes both ways. And I don't honestly know what the truth is. If you can line something up with him, I would love to do an extended interview with him where we can go through these. I am not hostile to him. I know the Blaze article, but that wasn't written by me, and I don't approve the articles on the Blaze. I was on the air that day saying, I don't know which way to go on this guy. And the Blaze decided, well, we do, but I don't know if I agree with him. They brought up some good points, but I also think there's some fair points on the other side that I'd like to hear from him.
I'll get your contact info from your producer.
Great.
I'm going to see him in prison on Tuesday. And if he has the ability to phone out of prison, I will encourage him to talk to you because he's his own best advocate.
And if not, maybe I can write to him and he can write answers back and you can get him to me.
That's a really good idea.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Glenn, for giving me the chance to make these points.
You bet. Thank you very much.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Now I speak my mind. This is one of the keys in this story, is actually saying things out loud. It helps. It solves a lot of problems. David Mellor is the author of the new book, One Base at a Time. It is one of my favorite stories. In fact, years ago, we bought this story. We were going to do a book and other things with it because I just find it so inspirational. We never got around to it, and I was feeling so guilty. I'm like, you got to hear this story. So he wrote the book, One Base at a Time. I now don't get a dime off it, but I want to promote it because it's one of the best stories I've ever heard. David, welcome to the program. How are you?
Great morning to you, Mr. Beck. Thank you so much for all your support.
You bet. I'm sorry it's taken us so long to get to this point. I want you to tell the story, and don't jump ahead. I want you to really lay the story out and start with you when you're young and you want to be a Major League Baseball pitcher.
Yes, sir. My dream was to make it to the majors. My grandfather played in the majors in 1902. And my dream was to follow in his footsteps. I played baseball throughout high school and had opportunities to play baseball in college with scholarships. And a month after I got out of high school, I was walking into a McDonald's restaurant and a car pulled in off the side of the sidewalk off the street and stopped, and they got out and changed drivers. So I stopped, and while they changed drivers, I waited for them. They got back in the car, and I motioned for them to go ahead and drive. And they motioned for me to start walking. And so I started walking, and I heard them rev their engine and squeal their tires. So I had time to turn and look, and the car was speeding toward me. And I raised my left hand, and my left leg in the car hit me, threw me 20 feet in the air.
Jeez.
And I slammed into the brick wall right where the door jutted out at McDonald's. And as soon as I looked up, the car was speeding at a higher rate of speed and hit me a second time, pinning the handrail and the car bumper against my knee, against the wall.
Oh, my gosh. What? Who were these guys?
Well, this lady said she stepped on the gas instead of the brake. And literally one of those moments where, your life flashes in front of your eyes. I thought not only is my leg crushed, I thought my dreams were crushed because, I grew up a Red Sox fanatic. My dream was to make it to the majors and someday stand on Fenway Park's mound. I thought at the time I would, go to college on a scholarship, study some kind of business in school. And I didn't even know what that meant. I just hoped I would get drafted and make it to the majors. And when I was hit, it literally was a moment that at first I became, you know, a really upset, angry 18-year-old kid. And my dad died when I was 3, and my mom and 2 brothers helped raise me. And they inspired me throughout my life that adversity makes you stronger. And they inspired me to look at that moment as an opportunity and a learning opportunity, inspired me to find a career that I would love to do.
So,
and not dwell.
Go ahead. And not dwell on the past. But let me go before you move forward. How many surgeries did you have to have? What did the doctors say when you were taken? This woman didn't pay any price, I would imagine. She didn't go to jail or anything?
No, sir. She did not go to jail.
Okay.
She was a part-time stripper. Did not have insurance.
Oh, my God.
They... I walked on crutches for 2.5 years. I walked with a cane for 10 months during physical therapy, had a horrific injury in physical therapy. I've actually had 45 surgeries, and I figure that's better than 46. Been hit by a car 3 times and figure that's better than 4.
Wait. You just drop these things out. You've been hit the first time. When were you hit a second time?
Well, the second time was actually at McDonald's. The car came at a higher rate of speed.
Wait. That's the same incident. Okay, mm-hmm. So you were hit there.
Yeah, same incident.
Then you were hit a second time. Okay. The third time you were hit.
Yes, sir. I was working for the Milwaukee Brewers in 1995, and we had just taken all the sod off of the field at County Stadium. And graded all the topsoil, and we were waiting for the sod to arrive. And I heard a car behind the bleachers, and I was out in the left field area near where the left fielder stood, raking around an irrigation head. And because of the car accident, I was very hypersensitive to car noises. And I heard this car, and I thought, that's odd. Why do I hear a car? And I turned around. There was a field entrance gate behind the left fielder's position. And when I looked, there was a car coming from behind the bleachers toward the field. So I ran over to where the warning track met the open field gate and put my arms up. And the lady smiled as big as she could and stepped on the gas and came right at me and hit me. And I hit the windshield and landed in a pile at the base of the outfield wall pads at the open gate. And she went speeding down the warning track, following the curve of the track. She was going so fast when she went behind home plate that she made a dust cloud, kind of a rooster's tail, throwing track material 10 rows up into the stands. And a couple of the groundskeepers came over to ask me what they could do to help. And I asked them to call 911. And behind the bleachers, we had big steel security gates. So I asked them to close those up so she couldn't get away. And as I was laying on the track, she made a full lap around the field, and instead of following the curve of the grass as she had before, as she got closer to me, she veered and started aiming right at me.
Oh, dear God.
And I thought, oh, my gosh, she's literally going to run me over again. And at the last minute, she swerved to miss me and slammed on the brakes and stopped right beside me, sat up in her seat, waved excessively at me, smiling. And then sat back down, stepped on the gas, and peeled out, covered me in track material, and drove through the gate behind the bleachers.
Okay. All right. Before we get into this, please tell me she went to jail.
Well, she was, she did not go to jail. She went to a mental hospital. I pulled myself up against the wall pads and got behind the bleachers, and she was out of her car screaming at the guard to let her out. And every other word was a cuss word. And I noticed her car was still running. And so I went over and took the keys out of her ignition. And she came over and yelling and cussing and spitting in my face to give her keys. And I said, I'm sorry, ma'am, I can't do that. So she got in her car and locked the doors. And when the deputies came, I gave them the keys. And when they unlocked the door, she tried to stab the deputies.
Jeez.
And they got her out of the car and put her in the back of a squad car and asked her why she was there. And she said she was there to do a stunt for a movie. Huh. And as a result, they took her to the county mental hospital instead of the jail.
Okay.
This was on a Thursday. And on Sunday evening, I received a phone call. They would like me to come testify. Otherwise, they were going to let her go on Sunday. So when I went to the mental hospital on Monday, there was regular courtroom in the hospital. Her attorney was there, and she waived her rights to appear in person. She was in a straitjacket in her room, and the deputy testified, I testified, and the doctor testified that she had a past history with mental illness. In 1991, she was arrested in Florida for stalking Julio Iglesias. In 1993, she was arrested on international charges, threatening the Queen of England. And the night before she did this at County Stadium, she had tried to assault Oprah in Chicago, but she got away. But Oprah's security staff got a picture of her in her license plate.
Unbelievable.
But because of her rights as a mental patient in the state of Wisconsin, all they could do is sign her up for a retest of her driver's license.
Oh my gosh.
Got to pick the date and the time of the test.
Oh my gosh.
And the doctor said if she took her medicine in the morning, she'd be able to pass the test in the afternoon.
Okay, so David, I'm going to take a rest here for just a second because your story is not done, and it becomes really hopeful here soon. Not too soon, but soon. And you have to hear this. It is his story is written in a new book now called One Base at a Time. It is truly a great book. If you're a baseball lover, if you're anybody who has ever had any problems or PTSD, imagine the PTSD this guy's had. You would be, I mean, just the movie poster for Christine would have made me wet my pants. But we'll continue his story here in
the Blaze Radio Network. On demand.